Thank you for tuning in to Cinema Central. Once again, I'm DJ Ace, and guess what happened? I finally got out to see Star Wars The Last Jedi, Take Two. All right, so this movie, Episode 8, is like the most divisive Star Wars movie ever. Like, when this sucker came out, the internet was in an uproar, and it was hilarious to kind of watch unravel. However, after my first viewing, I found myself struggling with myself as to whether or not I actually liked this film, which is surprising because it's a Star Wars film. And I feel like no one should have to struggle with whether or not they liked a Star Wars film, unless, I mean, there's exceptions, but we don't need to get into that. This is about The Last Jedi. So this is my review of The Last Jedi after watching it for the second time. So, what went wrong with Star Wars The Last Jedi? Just some background information. All right, we'll get to the review part momentarily. Trust me, there's a lot to unpack here. So, I believe what occurred is a case of unrealistic fan expectations. It's really easy to enjoy the movie, especially when you go and see it first show of premiere night. Because there's a lot of energy there, there's a whole lot of other people there, and it's a good time. But then once you see it, and then you start thinking about it, that's when the problem starts to happen. So, unrealistic fan expectations. If you do not know, Episode 7, The Force Awakens, was an absolute phenomenon. And The Last Jedi doesn't even come close to what The Force Awakens did. I got some numbers, which kind of breaks us down. So Force Awakens made $248 million domestically, domestic in the U.S., with a total, $248 million opening weekend. Sorry, opening weekend in America. Then, over its entire run, it made $936 million. That is like almost a billion in just the United States, okay? And then its worldwide total was over 2 billion, which is crazy. Last Jedi, I know it's still in theaters, but it is probably not going to last much longer. Jumanji has been above it ever since 2018. Since the beginning of the new year, Jumanji has been grossing more per week than The Last Jedi, so it's not going to last much longer. So these numbers are as of January 21st. But The Last Jedi's opening weekend was $220 million domestically. That is $28 million less than Force Awakens. And then it's $604 million domestically in total, which is like $300 million shorter than The Force Awakens. And I know it's still in theaters, but it's probably not going to get much higher. And then its global total is $1.3 billion. And that's just like so much less than Force Awakens when you break it down. So Force Awakens was a global phenomenon. So I'm not saying that Last Jedi wasn't a big moneymaker, because it's still the highest grossing film of 2017. That's not even an issue. But on top of that, Revenge of the Sith, the third movie in the prequel trilogy, came out in 2005. Force Awakens came out in 2015, a decade later. This is the first Star Wars movie in a decade. People wanted to go out to see it, either because they were excited or they're curious or whatever. People wanted to see Force Awakens. Now, sure, there was a little bit of backlash afterwards about, well, it's just a rehash of A New Hope. Well, I'm not going to deny it wasn't, but it doesn't mean it wasn't a great movie, because A New Hope was a great movie, too. So Force Awakens was a cultural phenomenon, and I'm not saying Last Jedi didn't make a butt ton of money. It did, but here we are, and we're stuck with this movie. So that is kind of how that breaks down. And what did the numbers tell us? The numbers are telling us we put unrealistic expectations on a sequel that was never going to be a perfect movie, because it's almost impossible to do that with a franchise like Star Wars, especially when you have a fan base so large and passionate about subject matter, okay? So that's my views on what happened with The Last Jedi. But moving forward is my review. So again, I liked it I was on the fence the first time. After the second time, I kind of liked it. So this is kind of my thoughts on what happened. So this movie's been out for months, came out around Christmas of December. I have a lot to say about this movie, so I hope you're in for a long haul. And again, spoilers all over the place. You can't avoid them. Even on the internet, you can't avoid them, it seems. So yeah, here's my DJ Ace certified review of The Last Jedi. So, Last Jedi starts roughly the same way that Force Awakens did, with some witty comments by our favorite X-Wing pilot, Poe Dameron. And then there's the lightsaber moment on the island with Rey and Luke. And this is kind of where, it's more pivotal than you think it is, because this is what happens. At the end of Force Awakens, you see Rey holding out Luke's lightsaber to Luke, and he has he says nothing, and he continues his trend of not saying anything, because he takes the lightsaber and he tosses it, which I think is the beginning of the root problem of fan or audience expectations, because that moment had so much power at the end of Force Awakens, and they just chuck it. Literally, they take that scene and they chuck it. And I think it's kind of metaphorical for, you should probably chuck all of your expectations right now, because this is going to be a different kind of Star Wars experience. So that's kind of the first thing I noticed. One thing I really, really, really enjoyed about this movie was people being practical and just practical concepts, okay? So at the very beginning, you have the First Order attacking the Rebel base, and they fly in that nasty-looking dreadnought ship, and the commander of the dreadnought says the most sensible thing ever. He's just like, we should have launched fighters 5 minutes ago, because in that time frame, Poe was taunting General Hux. It was just kind of funny. And he's like, this is the most practical thing ever. And if you flash forward to later, much later in the film, when Luke reveals himself on the other rebel base, on the salt planet, whatever it's called. And this is the first time I watched a movie. I'm just sitting there like, if he goes out there and just fights them immediately, I would be so disappointed, because they could obviously shoot him. And then Kylo's all like, fire everything. And I'm like, thank you. This is the most sensible thing I've ever seen in a Star Wars movie. So that, I really appreciated that moment. And also kind of a driving plot point in the movie was the fact that the rebel ships were running out of fuel. This is literally the first time in a Star Wars movie that they even address the issue of fuel in spaceships. This is never addressed at any point in the other 7 episodes. And I love that, because it's so sensible. I mean, and it's sci-fi, so it makes sense. And again, why shouldn't there be fuels? I mean, these ships have to get around space somehow. And then the other practical thing I really enjoyed, even though they kind of made him a laughingstock for the majority of the movie, I like that Hux actually basically did his job this movie. He's like, go hunt down the rebels, and he hunted down the rebels. Bam. And speaking of that dreadnought, there's a lot of tension between Poe Dameron and the rest of the Rebel command structure, and kind of what sets it off is when he launches a bomber attack on the dreadnought against General Leia's orders. So that's kind of what gets him in trouble, because a lot of people die in that run. However, obviously, minutes later, the rebels warp out, and then they find out the First Order's tracking them. If Poe Dameron hadn't have gone and blown up that dreadnought, we would have not had that crazy space chase scene for the rest of the movie, because the dreadnought would have just blown them all up from immediately. So, in the end, turns out is a good thing. And speaking of Poe Dameron, I think it's fair to say, along with Rey, Poe Dameron has probably the most character growth in this film. Because the consequences of his actions are, and his impulsiveness is what drives a lot of what happens in this story. And the whole subplot of Finn and Rose going to the planet to get the Codebreaker and all that stuff, that is all directly because of Poe jumping the gun and trying to be a hero all the time. And Leia points that out to him later on in the movie. Once you realize that's what's going on with that subplot, it makes a whole lot more sense. Because obviously that plan doesn't even work. And Poe has to deal with the consequences of the fact that his plan didn't work and people died again because of it. So I think that was a smart move. And again, these are just my opinions, man. We're all entitled. We're all entitled here. And of course, the misadventures of Finn and Rose had some interesting things to say about war profiteering and all that jazz. But this is one of my first major problems, though, is why did they land on the beach? Because it's like, later, when they're in the casino, no one's even looking for them. So it's like, why didn't they just land somewhere civil like the rest of everybody else and then just find the right Codebreaker? And then they probably wouldn't have had any issues. But no, they just landed on a beach and they get caught because of it. And that's when the whole plan starts falling apart. Like, it's something so, like, simple that it shouldn't even be an issue. But whatever. Whatever, guys. I don't even... Again, it's small. It's a small thing. It's a very small thing. But at the same time, it vexes me. It really vexes me. Speaking of other characters, I kind of liked the banter going on between Hux and Kylo, like at the beginning of the film, and this kind of carries over from Force Awakens, because Hux is always trying to upstage Kylo because Kylo's Snoke's prized pupil and all that jazz, and so they kind of have this like rivalry thing going on, because Kylo's like, I'll do what I want, and Hux is like, I'm running an empire, and so I kind of want to see that develop more in the future, but at the same time, part of me also thinks that maybe Hux would betray Kylo if push came to shove, because I think he's getting sick of Kylo getting all up in his business, and you see that at the end of the movie, because eventually, you know, Kylo's like yelling at him, and Hux is like replaying the orders because they're obeying their commander, not the guy who's supposedly in charge of their commander. And of course that backfires eventually when Kylo has enough of it and throws Hux into a wall. So I think if push came to shove, Hux would probably turn. Humor wise there's good humor, there's some weird humor. You know what scene I'm talking about. There's some weird stuff going on in there, man. But, yeah, it was solid for the most part. Now, one of the chief complaints I've seen is the whole idea of, if Admiral Holdo just told Poe her genius plan from the very beginning, he wouldn't have sent Rose and Finn on their crazy misadventure, and everyone probably would have been okay. Okay, sure, I get it. However, Holdo is a vice admiral. She got command because Leia was incapacitated and Ackbar died. So she gets command. And there is no rule anywhere in any universe that says the superior has to answer to their inferiors, okay? It's called chain of command, people. There's no rule that says they have to tell people what the plan is if they're under them. So I don't know why people are freaking out about this detail, because frankly, it's stupid. She does not have to answer to anyone about what's going on, especially Poe Dameron, which she knows is a reckless individual to begin with. So there it is. And speaking of Ackbar, I do believe that was kind of a letdown for me. I think it was a throwaway death. It was like he was there for 2 seconds and it was like, boom. Oh, by the way, Ackbar died. I mean, come on, man. He's one of the greatest memes in the last decade. You can't just throw out Ackbar. Like, what is that, Johnson? And actually, that also didn't sit well with me, because I had another recent movie experience where they just had a bunch of throwaway deaths of semi-prominent characters. Thor Ragnarok! Sorry, I had to clear my throat. Alrighty then. So that's just my bit. So we have Rey and Luke on an island together for a lot of the film. And at some point, we finally get to know what went down with Luke and Kylo. And I thought that back and forth was kind of interesting because of perspective. Because Luke tells his side of the story to Rey the first time, but he lies about it. And then that weird connection thing between Kylo and Rey is going on. And he tells her his version of the story. And then she makes Luke tell her what really happened. And it's just kind of funny. It's not funny, but it's just kind of cool seeing how perspective changes the scene, especially when it's the same scene being told 3 different times. So I just thought it was a neat little nuance there. Obviously, we see Yoda reappear to Luke at a point later in the film. He makes this really awesome point about failure being a teacher. And then, of course, he lights the tree on fire with the Jedi text in it. And he's like, "What are you doing?" But I have a theory that Yoda probably knew that Rey already stole the Jedi text. Or alternatively, he probably just like mystified teleported them onto the Millennium Falcon for her to find later. So I'm just saying, either way, Yoda was in complete control and you know, telling Luke something important while also ensuring the future of the Jedi. So I thought that was a neat little trick that he was pulling there. Towards the end of the movie, again, we have Luke Skywalker walking outside all macho to face Kylo. And the common criticism is, why does Luke have the blue lightsaber? Okay, well, about that. Does it really matter? Because at that point, Kylo Ren is completely blinded by rage at that point in the movie. So he is not paying any attention to the details of what is happening. All he knows is like, this is a dude that tried to kill me, and I'm going to murder the crap out of him with my cool lightsaber. He ain't paying attention to what lightsaber his opponent's using. He just wants to chop him to pieces. So again, sure, the audience might have noticed that something was up, and I think that's kind of the point. Like, because we don't find out he's projecting himself until later. I think the fact that he's using his old lightsaber is just a little nuance to tell you, oh, something's up. And then we see him move in the sand, the salt, and there's no like disturbance there. And then if obviously when Kylo eventually does slash him, it's like, oh, he's not really there. And they foreshadow that way earlier, the first time Kylo and Rey get connected, because he's like, you're not really here. It would kill you if you were here. And obviously, Luke doing that kills him at the end of the movie. So there it is, people. I don't know why I would get tore up about this lightsaber. Like, come on now. And speaking of the Rey Kylo connection, something I really appreciate about Johnson, the director Rian Johnson, was his use of silence. It was a very surprising yet satisfying cinematic thing he did. Just like sucking out all the audio and just making everything quiet. He did it three times, to my count. He did it twice when Kylo and Rey were doing their weird mind bridge thing, which of course Snoke was doing the whole time. And then the most prominent one, of course, is when Vice Admiral Holdo does the light speed ram. So that was pretty crazy. That was definitely a crazy moment in the movie. Like, oh my goodness. And speaking of the Rey and Kylo thing, the shirtless scene, I think we got to talk about that, because, I mean, let's be honest, Adam Driver worked out for this. But I just think it's funny because she's all like, I don't want to do this right now. And he's like, yeah, me neither. Because he's shirtless right now. I thought that was so funny. I didn't really catch that the first time. He's like, yeah, I don't really want to do this right now either. She turns like, oh, put a towel on or something, man. I thought that was cute. And earlier in the movie, we get a pretty cool, reasonable force explanation from Luke that has nothing to do with weird genetic things going on. And I thought that was really satisfying. And speaking of the force, new force powers, everybody. Okay, so we are talking about Luke projecting himself across the galaxy. Honestly, that didn't bother me as much as Leia being able to fly through space. I watch a lot of sci-fi, people. Let's get one thing straight. You can't survive in space. That's kind of like the no-go zone. You don't come back from this, typically. Space is bad for you. I mean, unless the Force exists in vacuum, I guess it makes sense, but there's nothing out there. So, yeah, that was a stretch for me. I'm not gonna lie. Sure, it looked cool, but I question, like, the practicality here. All right. So that's, like, I think that's my second critique. I got two critiques now. yeah. Oh, man. A lot of people complain about Luke being like this weird hermit guy. And honestly, I'm okay with that because I think it did a lot more for his character than anything else. Because he tells the story of how he almost tried to kill his nephew. All right. I mean, there's a line that you don't cross, and he almost crossed it. And I think, and especially for a Jedi, that would just destroy, like, anyone, like, emotionally, like, internally. And so him just going to total seclusion, I think makes total sense, all right? Makes total sense to me. And just another point on Luke. I didn't think about this until later. But when he catches Rey and Kylo Holt, like, touching hands in the hut, it's like the ultimate parent move. He just, like, rips the hut to pieces with the Force. It's, like, so awesome. when you think about it like that, it's like, they're holding hands. This has to stop. Rip the hut apart, everybody. Jeez. Oh, yeah. All right. So that kind of brings us to some of the end parts of my review here. The throne room fight was definitely, like, the apex moment of this movie. And it was amazing. It looked really cool. and seeing it first show, this was what is called the cheering moment. This is the moment where everyone in the audience audibly cheers at the movie. It was a fantastic moment in the movie, and it was just as enjoyable the second time. Maybe a little less so because not everyone was cheering at the screen, but it was well done and a lot of fun to watch. And of course, it's just, it wrecks your brain because you're just like, it's so hopeful because Kylo just killed his master and they're fighting together and you're like, oh man, he's actually going to turn. Except he doesn't. So, yeah, that's, and that is why that scene is so incredible to me, because it goes the complete opposite direction of where you think it's going. So, yeah, those are my baseline for the movie. Lots of stuff to digest here for the end. A lot of speculation going on. All right, so we're going to jump right into it. Snoke. Snoke was one of the two biggest mysteries after Force Awakens. Who is this guy? Guess what? We still don't know. And we may never know. That's just a fact we're going to have to live with. But I'm not so much concerned about how he got in charge of the First Order. My biggest question around Snoke, especially after seeing this movie, is who and how he is able to get close enough to corrupt Ben Solo, aka Kylo Ren, at the very beginning when Luke is doing his Jedi Academy. That's what I want to know. That is my biggest question coming out of this, is like, how is this guy able to actually manipulate Kylo into becoming a bad guy? That's what I want to know. Of course, Kylo killing him essentially was the best Sith thing he ever could have done, because Sith Padawans are notorious for killing their masters anyway, so it makes perfect sense. The second big thing that happened in this movie was Rey's parents. That was the other big question in Force Awakens. Everyone wanted to like connect it to another big Star Wars name, like, you know, Obi-Wan or Qui-Gon or whatever. And I don't think that's entirely necessary, to be quite honest, because via Luke's Force explanation, we get the idea that the Force is everywhere and that there's a balance. And then Snoke himself even says, you know, the more to Kylo, he's like, the more powerful you got, there was going to be another one to rise up to be just as powerful as you to maintain that balance thing. So I don't think she has to be anyone specific to do that, especially considering the end of the movie when we see that kid Force pull the broom to his hand. So it could be anyone, really. And so Kylo says that her parents are nobody. Yes, he could be lying, but and just keeping in mind what I said about balance and in Rey's reaction, I think that's the explanation we're going to get, and I think it's the one we're going to have to live with, and I personally am okay with it. Moving forward, there is the big question of what to do with General Leia. Obviously, Carrie Fisher passed away shortly after this movie wrapped production, and is definitely a blow to culture on a whole. She was a remarkable person and a great person and a great actress. So, and they did not kill her off in The Last Jedi. So what does that mean for Episode 9? Well, my theory is that they're going to kill her off via old age during the title crawl, because there's notoriously always been significant time gaps between Star Wars movies, particularly in the prequels. So it would not be beyond reason to do it that way, because, you know, the rebellion was completely almost wiped out in this movie. So if it's going to come back in any sort of significant way, some time has to pass between 8 and 9. So if that's the way they go, great. I can live with it. And then, of course, with the kid with the broom, We got the whole light the fire thing. Luke's sacrifice is the story that kind of reignites the rebellion. And we see that with the kids, like, telling the story at the end of the movie. I thought that was really cool. And I love that line, you know, we are the spark that'll light the fire. I really enjoyed that line. I'm not going to lie, because I think every movie needs, like, a good line. Why not? And then towards the very end, Poe and Rey meet for the very first time. He's like, hey, I'm Poe Dameron. And she's like, oh, I don't know you. And he's all like, I know who you are. And I'm just waiting for him to be like, so, you want to see my X-Wing? Like, it was totally there. You have to admit, it was totally there. So, for your consideration, hashtag pray. Oh, yeah. Ship it, man. Ship it and sell it. All right. Yes, we saw Captain Phasma again. She had really cool armor. She fell into a flaming inferno. She'll be back, maybe. I don't know. We'll see. Her fight was kind of cool with Finn. It was meaningful, but short. So, and I don't know. They really can't keep adding characters to this franchise at this point. So, if we lose one, it's probably going to be better for it. And speaking of hashtag pray, love triangles ahoy for episode 9. Because you got Rose and Finn, and you got Finn and Rey, and you got Rey and Poe. Bam! That's going to get convoluted really fast. And this is critique number 3. And this is the most, like, grievous error of all humanity in this movie. Rian Johnson, what were you thinking? You cut the iconic Star Wars line, man! What are you doing, bro? Like, I specifically searched it out the second time I watched it. Never heard it. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, you're not a true Star Wars fan. But you can look it up, and up until this point, every Star Wars movie has the line, I have a bad feeling about this. Well, I have a bad feeling for sure because you didn't put the line in it, Ryan. What's wrong with you? Jeez. If you're going to make a Star Wars movie, at least respect the franchise. All right, I'm done. So, final critiques. Overall, I thought it was a unique spin on a beloved story, but it was just too impossible to juggle all the requirements. You had what the director wanted to do, you had what the studio wanted to do, and what the fans also wanted. And there were just too many stories to tell and not enough screen time to tell them all. So overall, it was still Star Wars, it's still enjoyable, and we'll have to see what happens in episode 9. That's it for this Cinema Central. I'm DJ Ace. Catch you on the next one.
Booyah!